Hello and welcome to the Jazz Podcast. This is episode number 71 with Joy Ellis. Before we talk about Joy, let's quickly acknowledge this outrageous track by Gareth Lacrane, Fist Fight at the Barn Dance, which, pending Gareth's approval, because he hasn't texted me back yet, is going to be our new theme music while I waffle on. For instance, Joy Ellis is a pianist, singer and composer based in London. Since graduating from the Guildhall School of Music and Drama, she has toured all over the world playing jazz. Past gig highlights include Ronnie Scott's The Jazz Cafe and the Barbican Pit Theatre in London, the London Jazz Festival, the Cork Jazz Festival and No Black Tie Jazz Club in Kuala Lumpur. She was recently selected as one of the 14 emerging artists to work with Mercury-nominated singer Iska, or ESKA, depending on how cool you are, on a composition residency in Manchester. In November 2017, Joy released her debut album, Life on Land, on the Fire label, which we really like. The album reflects her passion for jazz and improvisation, her love of groove and dance music. I know. Let's have a listen to one of the tracks, The Jazz Man. Joy Ellis, welcome to the Jazz Podcast.
Hello.
I always forget to say my name. I'm going to do it. So I'm Rob and I'm the host, but hopefully it's not been too disruptive in the previous 70 shows where I failed to mention that.
And don't you say it in the little musical intro though?
Sometimes. And I just made the musical intro for today's show. And I forgot to mention it. But at least I remembered that I forgot.
That's okay, because you said it at the start.
So, let's talk about you.
Okay.
Wow, my cat just made an incredible leap into the wardrobe. That was amazing. He hates the Jazz Podcast, it would seem. So, first of all, in your photo, there is a Pittsburgh Steelers logo.
Ah, okay.
Let's talk
about that.
We're starting
cool.
Yeah, who saw that coming?
Okay. Well, that was kind of deliberate because so my partner Adam is who plays drums on pretty much most all of my music. He's he's from Pittsburgh. So yeah, like the Steelers.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, I'm a lifelong New York Jets fan.
Oh, dear.
I know. It's been awful. Every minute of it has been disappointing, to be honest, except for two seasons.
Right.
But, yeah, the other, like, 28 that I've lived through, it's been hard.
Well, Steelers, they're a good team.
Yeah.
I kind of lucked out with me, you know, Pittsburgh, because, they do pretty well most of the time, I think.
I think
I'm not the quintessential fan. He's the fan. I kind of tag along.
I see.
At points, and I thought, well, I'm going to represent Pittsburgh here by putting on the T-shirt.
That's really cool.
I've seen him a few times.
Nice.
They came to Wembley about in 2013, and we went and saw them there. It was amazing.
That really sounds cool. I went to see the Jets there maybe the next year, and Yeah, it's like a dream come true. It's really fun. So, Joy, tell us about yourself. Tell us things.
Oh, God. Let's start with music, I guess.
Who are you? Who are you? What's going on here?
Right. So I'm a pianist and singer, and I released an album last year of original compositions, which are kind of heavily jazz influenced, I'd say. And we did a little tour around the UK, and I was really happy with the way it came out. I'm really excited to do another one as soon as humanly possible, although it's like always budget permitting. And yeah. I kind of got about 65% of it. In fact, this week I'm supposed to be I kind of earmarked this week to really get finishing the second album. And I think I feel much, having done the first one, that was almost like a tester. And then I think this one, the second one, I kind of feel like I know much more what kind of sound I want to produce. Mm-hmm. And I like the kind of groove elements of I like incorporating kind of groove elements and the jazz harmony I love, some of my classical kind of, when I started playing the piano, I just did classical music, because probably a lot of UK pianists probably started, actually maybe a lot of jazz pianists over in the States kind of started like that, I think.
Did you do grades and such?
Yeah, I did all that.
it's such misery.
Oh, and then God. I quit it, actually. I did the grades. I enjoyed them at the start, but then I think it's kind of leaves you a bit directionless. I think they are helpful to a degree, but and then there needs to be supplementary stuff around it, like developing repertoire and all the rest of it. But they're helpful to a degree. I now do a lot of teaching, so I kind of like, we'll do the grades. But I think it's good to pad it out with lots of other stuff from different genres as well, because otherwise, you know, students get bored.
It's quite narrow if you're only going to do grades.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Although they think they all, like, list C pieces were always the kind of jazzy
the cool
ones.
Yeah, I know. The jazzy ones.
Everyone always loved those. And I think they've kind of, they've widened those, like, list B is now kind of getting a little bit funkier, but I don't know.
Do you ever teach the jazz grades?
I have taught the jazz grades. They're kind of cool. It's like see Nicky Owls and Pete Churchill. They've got some nice arrangements in there. And they're good. I think, again, it all needs to be supplemented with other stuff. And ideally playing with a band, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And jazz music, that's the best way. I didn't think I'd be talking about that.
Yeah, I know. How far did you get through the classical grades before you stopped?
So I did grade 8, then right. I did a like a performance diploma. Yeah. I just started, I was in my first term of Middlesex University, where I went to study jazz. And at the same time, I did this performance diploma in classical music or classical piano.
Yeah.
And I did the exam at Guildhall. I think it was the first time I'd ever been in there. So I was absolutely terrified, because you see all these names on the wall of all these amazing people that have been there, and the history of it and everything. Then I went down into the lecture recital room, which is kind of this, it's kind of a bit of a weird room. I've never been in anywhere like that before. And this guy with 100 letters after his name was examining me and it was just, I kind of had lost I wanted to do the exam and I wanted to do the pieces, but at that point I'd kind of lost interest with classical, and was definitely kind of moving more into jazz. I think I did a mix of stuff. I did some Bach, like really easy Bach, super easy Bach. And then I think I can't really remember actually, some Mozart, Debussy, and then Gershwin, like he did 3 preludes for piano, which are really fun to play. And I think it kind of progressively got better at the end. I think I like completely messed up the Bach, and then the Gershwin was, I really enjoyed playing, and you know, and I did it well, but I managed to squeak through and get a pass it. But I thought I never want to do a solo piano classical concert ever again. This is just not for me. But I mean, the music is, you know, for the most part, that kind of repertoire is fun to play. depending on what it is. And I'm much more into Bach now, actually.
Oh, cool.
But yeah, than I was at the time.
Yeah. I feel like everything's more fun if you're not being told to do it by someone else.
Yeah, well, I was kind of pushing myself to do it, but right. I don't know why. I think because I'm quite goal orientated, so mm-hmm. the exam was like a stake in the ground.
Yeah.
But at the same time, yeah, it wasn't music I was really, really into. So then, yeah, I was kind of just, I came to jazz really late, actually. So I got into Middlesex on the back of my classical grades, I think, and they very kindly, Chris Batchelor very kindly let me in. Although I think I was about half an hour late for the interview as well. I feel as terrible thinking about it now, because I think with London traffic, and I just moved over, and it was just, it was a nightmare. But it was really, I'm so glad to have done it, because, jazz has been such a fun music to discover. And the more I dip into it, the more I love about it.
So you did an undergrad at Middlesex and then mm-hmm. a master's at Guildhall.
That's right. Yeah. Okay.
And what was what was the undergrad? Was that jazz piano or classical?
Jazz piano. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
It was jazz piano. And then went over to the Guildhall and I kind of did a mix of both. Because I had Nicky Isles taught me for the second year, I think, at Guildhall. Middlesex. And then she and Pete both gave me some lessons at Guildhall, which was,
nice.
Yeah, great. So, yeah. It's a while ago now. it feels like it anyway.
When did you graduate? See, it's farther ago than when I did. That'll be a fun game.
I think 2008.
Okay, cool.
How about you?
2012.
Okay.
There we go.
Yeah, so yours was a 2-year course then. I think mine was just one.
How did you know that?
Well, because I think it was going over to a 2-year course.
Right, okay.
Kind of, at the time, I was really...
Because you can do it in 1 year at Academy. Some of my friends did it in 1 year.
Right.
But I just needed a lot of practice before I was going to achieve anything.
And that's the thing, isn't it? Yeah, there's just so much to do. And I mean, I kind of wished it had been 2 years, but at the same time, I'd done 4 and I was done.
Yeah.
At that point, anyway. I'd love to go back and do it again.
I worry about myself now. Like, if I went back and did it now, I'd appreciate it so much more.
Yeah.
Because I've had time to not be a student and realize that some days practicing is just really hard to fit in. When I did my master's, I came straight out of my undergrad onto it. So I was just like continuing with a life that I'd always known, you know?
Yeah. And I just got completely burnt out at the end of it. I was so burnt out, and I just wanted to play. Bless you.
Sorry. I might no, get your sneezes out. That's weird. That's the first time I've ever sneezed on the jazz podcast.
I'll keep it in. You should keep it in.
It's such an important thing. I will. All right. Sorry. Carry on.
Oh, no, just being at college burnt me out, but it was amazing, but there's just so much to learn. I think jazz is such, I completely underestimated it. It's funny, I teach a lot of adults now as well, and I think they kind of, retirees, they come around to jazz and think, I did a bit of classical clarinet or something, and I'll have a go at jazz, and then they just realized it's no way as easy as it, maybe some people make it look.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, it's really hard. It feels like such a fragmented thing to learn. Like, it's very hard to know, I feel, to know, like, well, if I do this, I'll definitely get better. I don't know. I always used to struggle with it because I could never tell if I was getting any better or not.
Yeah. I mean, this classical, you do your scales and then that kind of works, doesn't it?
Yeah.
For the most part, you can say, well, I'm getting faster or whatever, but the improvising is just such a different ball game altogether, I think. But
yeah.
I think it's taken me a long time after college, to really know as well within that what I even wanted to do musically, and to say that, to have be influenced by the tradition, and then it's okay to go and do your own music, do you know what I mean? Or to there was such, I mean, I don't know, they call it the jazz police or whatever. They felt like amongst, I think predominantly the students, actually, they felt there was this big thing. There was certain music you could like, and then other music, oh, it was just not, you couldn't. So I think that's taken me a while to kind of think, actually, yeah, I want to do this or I want to do that, and be, yeah, really know what I want to do rather than being influenced by like little devils on your shoulder saying, yeah, oh, you can't do that.
Yeah, yeah, I've always felt guilty, and this is probably an inappropriate place to say it, but I just... I just, like, you know, when people would say to me about, like, I have a lot of respect for John Coltrane and Charlie Parker, but they were never, like, great loves of my life, and I always felt terrible about that, you know, genuine guilt, like, that, yeah, that there must be something wrong with me to not feel that way.
Who were your genuine loves, then?
Oh, my genuine loves were, well, they are still Chris Potter and Michael Brecker. Those are the two that have, like, that's what would put me in a practice room and be like, yeah, better do some work now.
I'm ashamed to admit that I actually, over the last couple of years, I've just properly kind of started discovering Michael Brecker, and he's amazing. Mm. I feel like it's just, that's the thing, there's just so much music out there, and so there many is. Different, you know.
And the thing about Brecker specifically, I feel, is across his career, he's got a really good showing of what he was about. There's a, you know, I don't know if it was just the era that he was alive, but there's just so many recordings, loads of really like versatile, different things. You know, some of his own solo albums are really sort of, there's some stuff in there that's really weird. There's some stuff that's like Time Is of the Essence is an album that's just like, it swings so hard. And then like his last album, Pilgrimage, is like really interesting sort of contemporary jazz. And then, of course, there's like some epic and cheesy Chaka Khan, lots of pop tunes.
Yeah, he was an incredible musician, I think. Like,
who are you into?
Well, I was going to say, actually, I do like, so Randy Brecker played a lot with Eliana Elias. So I really love her.
Yes. Yeah,
she's incredible as well.
She was in the first Steps Ahead album.
Yeah, yeah.
As like 17-year-old. You know, yeah. Playing with Peter Erskine and Eddie Gomez, Michael Brecker, that must have been a hell of an experience at her age.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, she's played with loads of different people as well. I mean, and I've seen her live a couple of times, and I've always, yeah, enjoyed listening to her piano playing and the trio stuff as well in particular.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Brad Mehldau.
Does she sing as well?
Yeah, she does, but not loads. But she does some of the Brazilian stuff, and I'm quite into. My husband's really into Brazilian music, so I've kind of come into it like by kind of listening over his shoulder some of the stuff that he listens to, and she does a lot of, yeah, she sings predominantly, I think it's in Brazilian.
Right. Yeah.
Well, some American standards, but yeah.
Sorry, and you were going to say about Brad.
Yeah, I love Brad Mehldau. He's fantastic. I think compositionally as well, I really, when I heard Highway Rider.
Oh, I was just going to ask you about that album. That's my favourite.
I love that album. It's just like, when I heard it, it was like, yes, that's, I would love to write something like that.
Yeah, I get that a lot. Oh, I wish I'd written this. Damn, you know, in hindsight.
Yeah, this, the whole concept of it, it's just... Yeah, I found it really, really inspiring. I saw him do with the Britain and Sinfonia, I think it was in the Barbican.
Oh, wow.
It was like the first night of their tour doing that album. I think I'd already heard the album, but when I saw it was on, I was like, yeah, okay, I've got to go and see that. And it was amazing. It was really, really cool seeing it live, and great album. Yeah, I'd love to do it. And I think... Another guy similar to that compositionally, I heard a guy called Johannes Barrau, I think it was, soon after that. Well, maybe it wasn't that soon. I can't remember. Anyway, it was, I think, 2014. He did a thing on his album. He's got Wolfgang Mutspiel playing guitar. But I saw him live at King's Place with Willem Sincock and a whole bunch of like cello, double, like bass clarinet, and gosh, I can't remember now. Probably flute. There was a whole bunch of like kind of jazz improvising instruments, and then kind of some more classical instruments, and then it was all this guy Johannes Baer's compositions, and it was great. And I thought that is also, I'd really like, I think because of the classical, with my classical upbringing, I'm kind of interested in, that's where I want to go eventually. Yeah. I don't know whether I'll get there like compositionally or be able to do an album like that, but that's definitely where I'd like to head for. I don't think this album number, my second album, will be like that, but I'm thinking maybe in third I could do something like that. I don't know. Who knows?
Well, it's what I always use, like people like Mike Brecker. I think he was 39 when he did his first album.
Oh, really?
You know, yeah. For I know that's a long time, which feels great when you're like, okay, you know, that's a good amount of time to wait to have something. And then like Highway Rider for Brad, he must have been, I don't know, that must be his like 12th solo album by this, you know, it's maybe more, I don't know, but it's pretty deep, you know, there's a lot of trio albums first.
Yeah, that's the thing when you realize how many people, you know, how, you know, a lot of these guys started so young, it's kind of, but I think I've come around to it because I feel a bit older, that it's just, you know, you do, this is just so much fun. You know, and it's such a journey of trying to get better at something.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is slowly but surely happening. And, you know, it's paying the bills just
about. Yeah, that's great. The thing is, you just get, everyone gets better and better with age. You know, nobody's at their best when they're like 30. I mean, one of the first times I saw Chris Botta, he was 39 or 40. And, you know, in the press, he's written up as the, like, the young up-and-coming tenor player of the next generation.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah, this is what, this is, like, that, there's hope for me yet.
Yeah.
So, where did you grow up?
Oh, no.
Yes, tell us. I feel like we've been avoiding this.
Well, so I kind of, I was actually born in Cardiff in Wales, but I left there when we were two, and we kind of moved across the country via Wiltshire, and I ended up in Suffolk, in Ipswich to be precise, when I was about eight, and I grew up there till 18, and then I moved to France for 6 months, and because I really wanted to travel since I was little. I think my dad always inspired me with a travel bug. He'd been working in the Merchant Navy, or... Actually, I'm not really sure what he did. He worked on scientific vessels that went out into the middle of the Atlantic and would do stuff. And he'd say about, you know, going to Cape Town and, you know, other places. And he described all these amazing places. And I'm like, yeah, I want to do that. So, I went to France. And then, just since then, I've tried to, in my 20s, I traveled a lot, particularly after uni as well. Mm-hmm. Grew up in Ipswich, and that was like, Suffolk's really beautiful, actually. There's some amazing places. I think I played at Snape Maltings, or sang at Snape Maltings with my school choir, I played clarinet when I was younger, and it was orchestras. It was quite a nice, they had like a Saturday morning music school that I was part of, and so it was, you know, there was some musical stuff there.
Yeah,
which was quite nice. Quite good memories, whatever.
Mm.
Does that answer your question?
It does, yeah. And then, like, how did you realise that jazz was something that you wanted to do or play? Or do you remember, like, being exposed to it and being like, yeah, this is for me?
I think it was some of the class. I had a whole, I think my dad had bought me, like, a Duke Ellington book, which was basically a book of piano transcriptions.
Yeah.
Oh, actually, not even that. It was like simple kind of arrangements of some of his tunes. Same with like Thelonious Monk.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was starting to play them without really knowing who they were. And then I basically, when I was, I think, 23, I got I got a new keyboard and a mic. And I just started playing and singing a bit together, because I hadn't really done much singing until, my early 20s, and someone basically got me a gig in a pub. And I don't know why, but I just thought, oh, okay, well, jazz pianist and singer, you know, in the pub, and that was what it was, you know. So I do a bit of I do a bit of Diana Krall, so some of her, you know, arrangements really badly from a piano transcription book, and then probably a bit of Duke Ellington, maybe a bit of Alicia Keys. So it's like a massive mess of stuff.
Yeah.
And then I thought, oh well, I don't think I'm very good at jazz piano at all. Which, you know, I wasn't really playing jazz, to be honest. So someone said, I thought I'd just go and get some lessons. I thought, oh yeah, six lessons, they'll probably do it or something. And then realized very, very quickly that it was a whole world of, you know, stuff that and, you know, discipline that I needed to go down. So the I had lessons with a teacher called Jeffrey Wilson, who's in Chelmsford, and he, you know, we had some great lessons. It was really fun, and he suggested I go to uni. And I actually tried to get into a place in Holland, the Utrecht Conservatoire, but I think at the same time, it was a bit nutty. My life at the time was a bit all over the place, so that it didn't really work out. And thankfully, I got into Middlesex, because I think that was the absolute best place for me at the time. And I really enjoyed the course. That was, some really happy memories in my life, I think. But yeah.
So when you were, did you ever study singing as well as the piano, like with Pete Churchill? Did you ever like bring that up?
I had a lesson with Pete at Middlesex, and I think I had a lesson with another guy as well. Probably two vocal lessons, and up to that point I think I'd done a couple of classical lessons with a friend of mine. We, you know, went through some stuff, but I wasn't really interested in classical singing particularly. And so then I did singing at the Guildhall, and I kind of had a half and half, and I had Lee Gibson and got some lessons with her.
Right.
So yeah, I was really interested in improvising, to be honest, and I didn't really want to improvise on voice. I like scatting when Ella Fitzgerald does it. I don't think that's something Norma Winston, I really like that. And there was a band I was in when I was at college at Middlesex, which was quite free, and I'd sing quite a lot of free vocals over stuff. And this guy, my partner at the time, he would plug my voice into his Moog, which was fun. So it's like, it was hilarious. And it was, that kind of thing. But I'm not, you know, improvising with my voice. I really wanted to improvise, or really want to predominantly improvise on the piano or the keyboard or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I think it was technique that we looked at, and some improvisation. And I think singing is amazing for ear training.
Yeah.
And so that's what I kind of practice when I'm doing vocals now, to be honest.
Okay. Yeah. So do you, let's talk about Life on Land then, the first album.
Yeah.
So how do you pick your band for such a thing?
I've been playing with Henrik quite a lot, just doing, you know, like London gigs here and there, just because, you know, it's trio. And I like working with guitar players a lot.
So Henrik Jensen on double bass.
Yeah. and then my husband, Adam Osmansky, on drums. That was always going to, you know.
Yeah.
Be, you know, I'm really, and he's got the sound I wanted, you know, as well, fortunately. I was thinking about guitar players. I really wanted to have a guitar player because it helps me to be a bit more versatile when I'm, you know, singing as well. I was, you know, looking up a few people online doing this and that, and then I saw Rob Luff playing with Martin Speak at their Salisbury pub, which was like 5 minutes walk down my road.
Yeah.
And the gig was fantastic. I mean, Martin Speak's great, and really interesting compositions. And then what Rob did as part of the band was, yeah, it was like, that's the sound I want. That's it. Like, so, yeah. And then he came on board, and I was really happy with the way it panned out. And I'm really hoping, I think, Oh, sorry.
No, I can't resist Rob Luff. Like, the same thing happened to me with my album. I had a drums, piano and myself sorted, and I couldn't quite find the right sound on guitar. And then I played with Rob once, and he did some things that I was just like, oh my God, this dude, this man, what's going on here?
Oh, cool. So he's on your album? I should have, yeah.
It's not out yet, so you can't possibly have known.
I was going to... Oh, wicked.
But yeah, he's such a badass.
Yeah, he's definitely a lot of fun.
And he's so young, that's the most depressing thing about him. He's like 24 years old.
Yeah, I keep forgetting how young he is as well. It's really fun. We played at Manchester Jazz Festival recently, the four of us. And
yeah,
that's
what inspired me to ask you to come on the show.
Oh, right. I was going to ask you that, actually.
I was up there. We go each year because I grew up in Manchester. So, I saw you were playing a gig and I just thought, ooh, this could be fun.
Did you go to the gig?
Sadly not. Otherwise, I'd have... I'm really sorry. Not that I didn't want to. I was at a friend's stag do. The day of your gig, we went to Splashdown in Bournemouth. Nice. Which is kind of tragic, so I thought this might make up for it.
Yeah, it's a really fun gig. I mean, it's a great festival to be a part of. I was really grateful to Steve for booking us, and it was really fun, and he's such a character, like with
Steve Mead, yeah.
Oh, do you know? No, well, I was saying Rob, but I haven't met Steve. He was very nice on the phone when we chatted about the booking, but yeah, you know him quite well.
Well, he's he's like, I don't know, he just seems like an iconic Manchester character to me. You know, he's sort of, during the festival, his brain's overloaded to the point that he won't speak to anybody. So you sort of see him floating through the crowds, cutting through it as if he lives in a different dimension to everyone else. But yeah, I like about the Manchester Jazz Festival is one gig at a time. So he's at every gig. Or actually, there's the odd exception. I think Chris Potter and Aaron Gosh played at the same time. But other than that, you know, everything is one at a time. You get the same crowd checking out lots of different gigs. Steve can be there to introduce every single gig. So it's got a funny character about it because of that. Whereas like the London Jazz Festival, you maybe got like 6 or 7 gigs at once.
Yeah, that's nuts, isn't it? I mean, it's just so much choice. Hard to choose sometimes. So.
Totally.
Yeah, I love Manchester as a city as well. That was cool, such a great vibe. I did. I worked with an organisation called Brighter Sounds last year as well. They do a whole bunch of different series, and it was like the artistic director series where you get picked to work with a really well known, a good musician. So we were working with, I think Chris Potter did one actually. That was like the jazz director series with Brighter Sounds. And then I was working with Eska, and you basically work with 14 other kind of emerging artists as it is. And she was like giving us pointers and stuff and talking us through different stuff. You work with them, and then we all like kind of delivered a concert on, or like took part in a concert and showcase the music that we'd written over the 5 days or whatever. And Manchester, just such a great vibe. Having said that, it was, that series was back in, it was May 2017, so this, the Ariana Grande concert where the terrorists kind of the terrorist kind of bombing or whatever had just happened, and then we weren't sure whether it was going to happen or not, the workshop, but it went through, and it gave a really different atmosphere to it, and it was kind of interesting seeing like how music works in those scenarios or whatever. And people in Manchester are so resilient, so you grew up there.
Yeah, I did, very happily.
I was going to say, I can't, the accent is like...
I went to a boarding school. So,
go.
My sister has a really strong accent. We sound like we're like unrelated now. Because I just didn't pick it up, which I'm kind of grateful for. Because my mum... was from Swindon and my dad from Wolverhampton. So there was no like central, you know, accent. So I've ended up with this weird jazz podcast voice.
There's a slight twang, but then quite London as well, I'd say.
Yeah, well, I've been here for 10 years now, so it's bound to...
It seeps in, doesn't it?
It seeps, yeah. So let's just quickly talk about James Kopus and Binker Golding, because these guys are on a couple of tracks as well on your album. So, yeah, go on, tell us.
Well,
things.
Binker, he was at Middlesex in my year, and then he also went to Guildhall as well. So I've known Binker for a long time now, and I just... both of the tunes actually that I asked him to play on, I just knew he had the totally the sound I wanted.
Yeah.
For those, so I was really happy that he was available to do it, because that's a problem with all these people like Rob and Binker or whatever. They're never free because they're always booked up with doing other gigs. But and then James was actually Rob recommended him,
right.
And I'm so glad that he he did, because I was just really happy with the way it came out, and it was perfect really. So
amazing,
great. So such an honor to work with some really talented guys. It's
great,
brilliant.
And then your second album, you said you're 60% there.
I think so. 60%.
Is that in terms of like composition?
Yeah, so we've done, when you're doing something like Manchester Jazz, you kind of have to have 2:45s, don't you? And I think my album's, 55 minutes long or something, so I definitely needed a few more tunes.
Yeah.
And I don't think all of the tunes on my album work. Well, they probably do work in a live setting, but I don't play them, play them all live.
Yeah.
There's definitely some I prefer to play more than others. So I had to write a whole bunch of new stuff anyway.
Yeah.
And so I did, and there's not quite enough for a second album, but it's, just got to finish it off. Okay. Lyrics is the thing for me. I want to have some instrumental stuff. And I find it hard actually to know which ones are good to do lyrics for and which ones to not do lyrics for. And also to try and write something that's not cheesy is so hard. I don't know. But, I like singing. It's nice to do. So I kind of want some to be vocal, but then with large elements of improvisation in it. So, that's kind of eluding me at the moment.
Yeah.
But this week, hopefully, I'll fix them up. And it'll be done, and then I can record it, hopefully, if Rob and Henrik are free, and Adam. So
cool.
We'll see.
So what's your favourite thing to do that's not involving music?
I love travelling.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's a bit generic. Place?
No, that's good. What, do you have a favourite country that you've ever visited?
Adam and I met in Malaysia. So I left the Guildhall and I got a gig in a hotel, a 5-star hotel in Malaysia for 2 months. And we met there. He's American. So he was drumming in a trio out there, and we both went to each other's gigs, hit it off. And we both really love the culture out there.
Yeah.
And the people are amazing. The food's incredible. So that will probably be one of my, from the sentimental side.
Yeah, of course.
One of my favorite places. I love Rome. I love the States. Where else? Oh my goodness. There's so many countries, places I've been lucky enough to go to that I...
So Adam has an American passport because he's an American citizen.
That is right.
So when you go to the States... Should probably have said all of that thought process out loud. So then when you go to America, he'll get to go in the US passports queue and they'll be like, welcome home, sir, and then you'll be like, they'll point a gun at you. That must be annoying.
Well, I think they used to. And then, I never had a big problem. He had more of a problem coming over here, actually.
Oh, really?
The whole visa thing is a nightmare wherever you are, I think. And, And it's ongoing as well, because you've got to have, you get an extension on your spouse visa, and then you've got to get an extension on that. And then, yeah, so it is a nightmare. But when we both go in now together, we just, I just walk with him and I don't say a word. He just gives the passports and, like,
brilliant.
You try and get through as quickly as possible.
Taking a vow of silence.
Yeah. And then similarly, I think most of the airports you come into, I think you can go up together. You can't go through the facial recognition one, but
right.
Yeah, you go up and speak to somebody, and they're normally very nice.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
Wow. Well, yeah. Joy, thank you so much for coming on the Jazz Podcast. We've had a great time.
Oh, that's very sweetie. And I think it feels a bit random.
No, it's supposed to be random. Yeah. Spit out random questions and see where we end up. You're going to have the distinction, I believe, of being the show that tips us over 20,000 all-time downloads.
Wow.
Yeah, yay. I know. Right place at the right time. But the minute this show comes out, I think we'll tip over the line, which will be very exciting.
Awesome.
Yeah. So thank you in advance for tipping us.
Oh, fingers crossed you do now. I'm going to be watching it, like, on repeat.
Yeah, or listening, yes, to please it. Do. Just stick it. That's how I think we've gotten really high, because possibly a lot of those are my mum. All right, I'm going to play the Jazz Man to... no, I'm not. We listened to the Jazz Man at the start. Let's listen to Life on Land, the title track from your album.
Thanks, Rob.